This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
I don't want people to not tune into us, but Wimbledon's got heat right now. Nadal and Taylor Fritz locked in a battle. Fritz up 2-1. They're on serve in the fourth, and Nadal obviously needs to win this to stay alive. I need Taylor Fritz to win to break even on my Place Your Bets yesterday. The question will also be, will this finish before the today's Place Your Bets segment? I don't know. But right now, to talk about the only topic at the pool this afternoon, and that is the survival of the ACC in the college football. What are you wearing? What are you wearing in the summer? What is this that you came on the show wearing? Is this an Italian soccer league shirt? Is that what we're getting here?
Yeah, it's the Fiorentina top kit from Serie A, which you can watch on Paramount Plus.
Stop. Do you have an Italian soccer team? Is this like a real thing? You're not wearing this ironically. This is an actual choice.
Yeah, no, that was so. My decision to support Fiorentina happened for two reasons. Because this was during the pandemic, soccer over in Europe was one of the first sports to come back. When you were done watching marble racing on Twitch, you actually got the opportunity to watch some real live sporting events, and Italian soccer was one of those leagues. They came right after the Bundesliga. And so I was like, okay, cool. And the two reasons that I decided to saddle up with Fiorentina was, number one, I love Florence. Like, it is a beautiful place. Spent a week camped there. We went around to the rest of Tuscany. We went to Siena and Pisa, but Florence was our home base, and I had a great time there. And number two, based on my amount of research, Fiorentina seemed the most like the Charlotte Bobcats. Stop. They were consistently like 9th or 10th. They were never going to contend for any kind of championship, and they were always losing their best players to other teams. In fact, the best player for Fiorentina since I have been a fan in the last two or so years has left for Juventus twice. First Federico Chiesa, then Dusan Vlahovic. And I'm just constantly having to watch this talent leave for better clubs. And so it was a fandom experience as a Bobcats fan. I felt like I could bring some good knowledge of what heartbreak looks like.
That's been Chip Patterson. Thanks for the time. I walk a fine line here on, like, I am pro soccer. I'm pro growth of soccer as an American sport and as an American's, like, you know, embracing other sports. But it just, I don't know. I feel like the whole, like, I'm choosing this team because whatever. Like, I don't know. Like,
oh, so I've always talked about one of the things I love about the Hurricanes and being a fan of the Hurricanes is that I'm bringing a true sports fan attitude to it, which right. is I do not care about the other teams. I do not care about the players on the other teams. I do not care about the coaches or their storylines or their narratives. All of the things that I have to do for college football, college basketball, and golf in terms of fully knowing everything that's going on, I want none of that responsibility.
Don't even want to know the rules, really. I don't want to be fully aware of the rules. I just want to cheer and boo as a fan. Yes, I'm down with that.
So and that's been my introduction here. I was like, okay, I'm going to choose this one team because there's 20 teams in Serie A. Like, I'm not actually going to learn about all these other guys. And so I've had that same approach where I don't really – care about following all the action in the rest of the league, but yes, it is fun on weekend mornings to get up and see how Fiorentina is going to break my heart this Saturday.
All right, well, the Canes one is easy to buy because you grew up in Raleigh, North Carolina. I guess if you're claiming that Florence is your vacation home, then you can have that one too.
We're also owned by an American who is constantly battling with the traditionalists over there in Serie A. They hate that an American owns the team. So it's been fun to, again, just get that small glimmer into the league over the last couple of years.
Chip Patterson does his summering in Florence, and while he's there, he keeps abreast of the conference realignment news. I talked to David Glenn a lot about ACC specific stuff. One question I did not ask him, and we could put it on the ACC's shoulders or not, but I'm going to look more broadly just at the decision. Does what is happening right now in conference realignment play out differently if the Power Five had agreed to go to, I believe it was a 12-team proposal that was on the table? Would a 12-team college football playoff being locked in have prevented or altered in some way these moves we just saw in your mind?
No, I think that it might have delayed them, but I don't think that it would have solved all the issues. And I remember that was one of the popular sentiments. Several, you know, well-informed national writers came out right off the jump and said that the ACC and the Pac-12 screwed this up by agreeing along with the Big Ten to vote against it. The final vote was 8-3, which Notre Dame voted for, along with seven other conferences, and then the three no's were the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12. The Big Ten's motivations, from my viewpoint, is that when you agreed to the expansion in that window, it meant ESPN owned it. ESPN was going to have all the games of the 12-team playoff, and the Big Ten, as we know, is very much in bed, controlled, and being advised by Fox. Fox did not want the college football playoff to expand before 2026, because then it would mean ESPN, which had just landed the SEC for all of its media rights, was now going to also have the college football playoff. It meant ESPN was essentially going to control college football. So Fox wanted to make sure that this thing was going to be able to go open to market, that they were going to be able to have a say here. And the only way that was going to happen was as long as the college football playoff contract ran out all the way until 2026. And so they were able to obviously convince the Big Ten, but then the Big Ten also is able to, I don't want to say the Big Ten convinced the ACC and the Pac-12, but that was a popular narrative right after the decision was ACC and Pac-12, which obviously got stabbed in the back by losing USC and UCLA, and the ACC, which now finds itself on a little bit of a, you know, rocky footing, I guess you could say, in terms of the overall college landscape, that you could have maybe prevented this if you just let it expand. I don't agree with that notion. I think that the move by the ACC and by the Pac-12 to vote against the college football playoff was that just sensing that there was a little bit of a runaway train in college football in general, that they wanted to slow things down. Now, you know, I never put anything into the scheduling aspect of the alliance. Right. I never put anything into the idea that there was going to be some alliance invitational. I only viewed it as a voting block that they put together just to prevent the SEC from basically controlling college football and ESPN from controlling college football for the next 12 years.
Chip Patterson joining us from CBS Sports. What is the next move as you see to happen? We heard reported yesterday that the Big 12 is eyeing 4-6 Pac-12 teams. Is that a move that you think is like imminent, or was that just a power play to announce that while the Pac-12 was power positioning by saying that they're opening their, you know, media negotiations immediately? Is there a chance that all five leagues survive? What's the next move? And then what do you think is the shakeout? And when we get to 2 to 3 years now, whatever this is considered this round, I'm putting Oklahoma and Texas in the same round of realignment as UCLA, USC. So like, what's the next move in this round? And then where are we when the dust settles in this round in your mind?
I do not believe anything is imminent unless Notre Dame wants to make a decision. My understanding is that the Big Ten will not make another move until it hears back from Notre Dame. And Notre Dame is never, ever been in a rush to work on anyone's schedule but Notre Dame's schedule. I think that for those Pac-12 schools, the reason they are going into these media rights negotiations is so that they can know what's behind both doors, so that Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, heck, even, you know, Washington and Oregon, which I think Washington and Oregon would much rather be in the Big Ten, but the Big Ten's not going to invite Washington and Oregon and expand further unless they know that they are going to go for like an even bigger move here. They're just going to sit back. If Notre Dame wants to go, then maybe that initiates another wave where we see Washington, Oregon, Stanford, Notre Dame all join the league, and then all of a sudden the Big Ten finally gets to be the Big Ten 10, a.k.a. the Big 20. Big 12 is being aggressive. The Big 12 is going to try to do everything it can to go out there. Remember, hey, where did their new commissioner come from? Rock Nation, baby. I'm telling you. He's coming for him. He's going to go out there, and he is going to try to make a splash. He's going to try to be like the Mr. Entertainment, shaking up college sports, you know, want to be the visionary. And for him to take a league that, which, by the way, Big 12 schools were talking to the Pac-12 about joining the Pac-12 a year ago, and the Pac-12 said no.
Yeah.
Said none of y'all provide enough value. So the Big 12, I think, is looking at the Phoenix market from a television perspective, Arizona, Arizona State. I think it's looking at Utah, which not only would bring Salt Lake City, but gives BYU, which is going to be a member
in the Big 12,
a nice travel partner there in the Big 12. And now the Holy War becomes a conference rivalry. And of course, Colorado is your old lover, you know, just getting back together with somebody who you've already had a previous relationship with. Those four, like if you would ask me to predict of all the things that are being rumored, those four seem like they are not imminent, but they are moves that I could see happening, you know, as you said, when the dust settles. But as we sit here discussing this today, those schools are also still trying to talk to the Pac-12 to at least see what staying together would look like financially, while the Big 12 is going to be trying to make their pitch as well.
Chip Patterson from CBS Sports. I'm going to ask him another when the dust settles question. A lot of us trying to guess again, and I'm not, I said this earlier, I'm not knocking anybody who's talking about what are the rumors. You know, like right now, Virginia fans and UNC fans and Duke fans and NC State fans are all looking where they are or aren't potentially being included, or where, you know, you see fans of those schools declaring like, well, I'd rather be in the SEC or I'd rather be in the Big Ten, whether it's warranted or not. Now, again, the reporters who are reporting on it are talking to ADs or members of the, or, you know, people who run the Big Ten, the ACC, and the SEC, and asking who are the programs that still have value, and they're naming North Carolina and Virginia and Notre Dame. So I'm not saying that they're creating, they're making stuff up, but just, you know, that it isn't a matter of next week, are we going to see UNC in the Big Ten or the SEC? It's going to be one of those two, right? Like, I don't think we're quite at that point.
No bad ideas portion of the proceedings.
Yeah. Yes.
That all of everyone's sitting around and it's on Zoom or, you know, whatever their proprietary, you know, Zoom function is that they're using, but they are sitting around and they are saying, all right, there are no bad ideas. And they are big meetings with lots of ideas. And so when it gets leaked to a reporter that something was considered, guess what? It was considered with 99 other ideas.
Right.
And so that's why I have a lot of patience to any of these reports, because the more research I've done, the serious moves, the ones that result in action are kept very, very close. Yeah. With a small circle until they are done.
That's the other thing. It's almost like a mobster, you know, getting hit versus getting caught by the police, right? Like, if it's like, dude, if it was a hit, I would have seen it coming. Like that, you know, the police are like clumsy and they're yelling like, get out now, right? You know, like if it's a rumor, you're hearing all about it and probably isn't true. If it was going to happen, you wouldn't have heard about it in a rumor first. That's a very good point.
So for 6 to 8 weeks, to put together the USC to UCLA deal, the total number of people involved, like handfuls, you know, at each of those two universities and even within the Big Ten. And then you finally got to the final 2 weeks where they brought in full calls with all the membership of like university presidents, one last call with athletic directors like 3 days before the deal went down. Like, there's just no way that is it possible that something that is reported from one of these no bad ideas sessions does happen? Yeah,
sure.
But to your point, it's like, it's not imminent if we're hearing it now, because it just means that it's something that's being talked about during one of these anything goes, let's map out all of our options. When it comes time to really put things together, it's normally held pretty tight until right before things go down.
Chip Patterson from CBS College Sports. We'll talk some more conference realignment. I'll give you a Wimbledon score update because I care about it. That's next on the Adam Gold Show.
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that. You can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
American Aquarium covering Jody Messina, I believe. Is that right?
That's right.
This is a fantastic song.
Oh, yeah.
This is not as good as the original.
How dare you say that?
I'll tell you a story. I saw American Aquarium replying to somebody basically saying that. They did an album of all country covers of basically their favorite cover songs. And somebody's like, oh, that wasn't as good as the original. And they had a great reply. I'll tell you about it. Chip Patterson joining us from CBS Sports and the Cover 3 podcast. Chip, there's been talk about will there be a insert number here, 28, 36, 48 team super college football league, basically a new division that would break out from another one. Is there any chance of like, you know, if you're the ACC and let's say you feel secure that nobody's going to leave because your grant of rights makes it super prohibitive, at least for the next couple of years, is there any chance you wait it out and see what happens with the potential of, they're creating a new super league and not trying to just wait out the storm that way and then let the see how it shakes out with the College Football Super League before you make any moves? I know the ACC isn't trying to add teams, and obviously it's not trying to lose teams, but is that the next more likely thing to happen, I guess, for us to get new news about just the way the top tier of college football is going to operate, maybe breaking away, maybe paving the way for players being paid, however you qualify them, that letting that stuff all shake out and not let this be seen as a conference realignment thing. Let this be seen as a college football finally settling into where it should be as a semi-pro type league that are different from everything else that is college sports.
Well, let me start by bringing some clarification, because Super League and sort of the breakaway and in a lot of ways that this has been framed, suggest like an entirely new formation. And that is possible. But one thing is significant to me. There is an NCAA Transformation Committee. One of the things that the NCAA Transformation Committee is in charge of is trying to find ways to allow the schools that are operating at a different level financially, a different level in terms of resources, to allow them to not be prohibited by some of the rules that are being voted on by schools that have much less resources, the schools that do not want to play in some of those same worlds. So I see it more as creating a new subdivision, much in the way that 1A split away from 1AA, and later we came to call them the FBS versus the FCS. The easiest way to explain to a sports fan is that FBS has 85 scholarships and FCS has, I think, 63 or 65 scholarships. And when you think about the true value of a full ride scholarship, that's money, right? How much money are you willing to put into the players being on your football team, in your football program, their housing, their board, their meals, everything else? And the FBS schools are putting more money into their football program than FCS schools. I see this as creating a new subdivision above FBS where, like you mentioned, maybe players are paid. Maybe you're allowed to hire as many coaches as you want. Maybe you're allowed to have as many recruiting days as you want. All of those things of which there are caps under the current NCAA rules, caps that are supposedly supposed to allow everyone within the same umbrella to compete in the same sport,
right,
which is not a reality whatsoever. So let's take those caps off and let's allow those who really want to go all out in terms of their spending, in terms of their resources, in terms of making college football the number one priority for a university, let them go do it. All right, now let's come back to the NCAA Transformation Committee. One of the co-chairs of the NCAA Transformation Committee, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. Now, unless this is totally like the call is coming from inside the house, inside man, he's going to blow up the NCAA after being the co-chair on the Transformation Committee, I think that Greg Sankey, as the SEC commissioner, is not going to form a super league that's going to break way away from everything else and ruin all the NCAA tournament and everything else about the connection between these divisions. But I do think that as the SEC commissioner and very much the leader of one of the conferences that's going to be a part of college football as it's played at the highest level for the next coming decades, he does get to help shape the rules in a way that is going to allow the SEC and those SEC schools to spend as much as they want, to put together the same kind of, you know, compelling television product that's going to bring in millions of dollars for those schools that are playing at a different level. And so I think that it is important to remember that this is not necessarily the end of the NCAA, but it is certainly the end of college football at the highest level, all being played on the same caliber across the board. And, you know, this is, again, not just the division from 63, 65 scholarships to 85 scholarships, but this is going to be more along the lines of like, okay, you know, Akron, you can't and are not going to spend as much as Ohio State. Let's stop having you exist in the same world.
Right.
Because currently, as FBS programs, they exist in the same world. And you bring it back to the ACC, how many ACC schools want to play in this new world where we're just taking the restrictor plate off and letting you drive just as fast as you want? And that's why it becomes a philosophical question for the league itself. Do we all go? Do some of us go?
Yes.
And, you know, how does that end up breaking down? But I think that, you know, none of that is imminent, but that is sort of where the big picture stuff is headed, in my opinion.
I guess, well, I know you're like, none of it's imminent, but I'm like, yeah, those were my exact follow-up questions. So, yeah, you mentioned the disparity between Akron and Ohio State. What happens when it's not quite the disparity, but when you go to, and Wake Forest gets mad when you put them in scenarios. So I'll say Duke football and Clemson, where it's like, are you guys, you know, want to do the same things? And that, and then you segged right to what was going to be my next question is there a world where the ACC can stay together as the conference it is in basically every way and still have, you know, whether it's two or four teams playing at the super level and the other 11 teams or whatever the actual math is, playing at the highest level that isn't the super level? Like, is there a potential world where that could happen?
I don't see it happening for football because so much of football, like, it would mess up your TV money.
Okay.
It would, just like any choice to not play at the highest level is costing yourself money. The ACC is already at a fighting an uphill financial battle when it comes to playing in the same world as the SEC and the Big Ten. You're either going to make a decision to jump up into that world and hopeful, like, best case scenario here. So the ACC is going to join this new subdivision, and it will be called the College Football Playoff Subdivision of the NCAA. It will have entirely new rules. It will have the ability for a lot of these programs to take these millions and millions of dollars and turn it into, you know, was it student worker salaries? I don't know. Like, we'll figure out exactly how to like spin this later, but you essentially are turning into the semi-pro league, as you mentioned earlier. The ACC might choose to also be a part of this College Football Playoff subdivision, because by being a part of the College Football Playoff subdivision, it means you get to cash checks from the College Football Playoff, and this new College Football Playoff from the College Football Playoff subdivision might be able to generate enough revenue that you can not make up what might be $50 million gap 10 years down the line, but it might be able to give you more money than you're making right now, and it would definitely give you more money than what you would make if you were playing a lesser brand of football, because a lesser brand of football is not going to draw as many viewers, and you need to be at the highest level of football in order to generate the most in TV revenue.
And David Glenn made some good points about, you know, the disparity is getting bigger, but the ACC has... the payouts don't guarantee success, right? Like
the ACC could choose to say, yeah, well, that's right. We're good. We're going to hold everyone together. And, you know, like, we're just going to go into this new world. And the ACC could maybe even lose members and still plow forward and be like, no, we'll play in your new super division. And, you know, we'll have our hate game against insert school here that went to the SEC or insert school here that went to the Big Ten. But we as a conference still, as a prestige play, still want to be a part of college athletics in all sports at the highest level. And our universities are financially secure. Like, UCLA's athletic department was in debt. Like, they needed money. It was a very much like a Maryland-like play where they had an opportunity to get a cash grab, fix a financial situation, and also better themselves for the future financially. There are some universities throughout the ACC that might feel fine, you know, might not be hurting for cash. And the only thing that they're really stressed about is really something more that like Clemson is stressed about, which is keeping up with Ohio State. there's ACC members that don't care about keeping up with Ohio State because they're playing a different game. They care about different things and their priorities are different. So I, to answer your question, I don't see a fractured ACC where some member schools are playing football at one level, others are playing football at another level. And I don't see that because then you're messing up the entire conference's TV money.
No. Chip Patterson, CBS Sports. Have you taken the kids to the beach this summer?
Yeah, we did. We did about maybe like 4 or 5 nights down at Pine Knoll Shores.
I feel like everybody says like having kids on the beach is the worst, but I feel like I want to have kids just so I can be like, hey, guess what? I took my kids to the beach and I had a good time. So like, did it turn you off to the beach entirely, having kids at the beach? I know it's a handful. I know like I can't nap for like 2 hours, drink for 4 hours, and like swim when I'm hot for like 20 minutes. I realize that it's going to alter my schedule, but like, will I still like the beach after I take my kids there?
Yes. Okay. I'll tell you what, the aquarium crushes it. Yeah. I'll say that like the beach itself is physically exhausting.
Okay.
A lot of lifting through the sand dunes.
Yes.
A lot of like new physical challenges that I was not that I was ready for, but that, you know, definitely surprised me. But, you know, the aquarium, putt-putt, going to the Moorhead waterfront. And what's the activity? We're going to look at boats and get ice cream.
Sure.
And that is an amazing activity. So for me, my experience was, you know, just sort of the general beach area activities were very rewarding. The experience on the sand and in the water, physically exhausting.
It's not quite the answer I was looking for, but it's an honest one, and I would expect nothing less from you. I'll take it. Chip Patterson, appreciate it. Hope you don't go out wearing that shirt, and hope to talk to you soon, my man.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
Everybody, oh, kids to the beach is the worst. North Carolina should just give away its beaches. This is terrible. Nobody should go to the beach anymore. I'm like, quit ruining the beach for me, parents, okay? You can get through a couple tough years, and then you'll be able to sit next to your kids and sip a cold drink and talk about life.
Yeah, just because I don't have kids doesn't mean I can't enjoy the beach.
That's right. I'm still hopeful that even when I have kids trying to drag me down, that I will still be able to enjoy the beach with them. We're 90 minutes into the show. Actually, a little bit more. A little less than 90 minutes. Fewer than 90, I guess 90 minutes, we're taking it as an allotment of time, not a number of minutes. We're going to say 90 minutes, less than 90 minutes left in the show. This is, I know you cared about being grammatically correct on that. I care less and fewer is one I care about a lot. This is Halftime.
And now, your Halftime Entertainment.
Well, regardless or irregardless.
Sure. No.
I knew that one would get
you. Not irregardless.
I knew that one would get
you. Unless you're ordering food, then it's delicious.
Their food is fantastic there, by the way.
One of the longest restaurants still standing in Raleigh that I can remember.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been there as long as I can remember. I think it technically has been there not as long as I've been alive. I think it was like maybe 1980 it came around.
Okay. So it's older than me.
But I remember it. I don't remember it not being there.
All right, there's a trend going on with movie theaters, specifically the rise of Gru, the new Despicable Me movie, basically the prequel, I guess you could say.
Okay.
So there are it's a TikTok trend where young teenagers who were young kids, I guess, when this movie came out, where they dress up in suits or maybe dress up like minions, get rowdy during the movie and start throwing bananas at the screen.
You know what this sounds like? Have you ever gone to the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I have not, actually.
So, and I think it's gotten tamer now, but like this is the whole cult of the Rocky Horror Picture Show is people, and they still show it at the Rialto, I think once a month on Friday nights at midnight, is people would go. And there was like participatory stuff. Like when there's a wedding, they're throwing rice. And when they do a toast, I think people throw toast. And there's at one point where I won't get into all the details. And I don't know if you are supposed to totally strip naked or you're just running in your underwear or what it is. But there is a sort of streaking moment in the theater. So I kind of respect Minions becoming an interactive movie thing. Now, I'd be super annoyed if I paid, you know, whatever it is, $20 now for movie and a beer, and I got hit in the back of the head with a banana by a minion. I would be a little annoyed, but overall, I kind of respect this. What about you?
I like it. So I like when,
like, if I went on opening weekend, I'd be like, is this a promotion? Like, yeah, is this like, paid? What is happening? Am I supposed here? To just go along with this?
I kind of wish that theaters would maybe designate, like, hey, if this is a movie, like, where you want to do this thing, these are the times.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
Designate that. So, like, if you don't want to be part of this,
yes.
Do not buy this movie time.
Alamo does that, like, movies that that are musicals.
Yes.
They'll like designate sing-along. A sing-along. Like, don't get annoyed because this is the Grease sing-along. We're all going to sing the songs. Make a Minion movie. That's what needs to happen. Nobody should be forced to endure Minion activities if they don't want to, I guess. But I kind of like a Minion full fuss. Yeah, movie theaters are now trying to do the, like, I don't know what it's called. It's one step beyond IMAX. We're now, like, where the wind's blowing in the movie and they, like blow wind at you.
Like a 4D type thing.
Yes.
I don't know.
I could see this becoming, like, part of the movie where, like, a Minion looks like he's about to come out of the screen and, like, in the theater they've got to do it in a Minion suit. To be like, ah! And he comes running around.
Just throwing bananas at you.
This is the real, you know, like, have it be baked into part of the movie. I'm all for this trend. I love this. I don't know the Minions. I laugh when I see them, so, like, I've found them to be comical, so I'm okay with them. Mm-hmm. But I like this as a trend. I'm all in.
I like it, too. I kind of equated a bit to when I went and saw, like, Infinity War, Avengers, Spider-Man. The days that they came out, you knew you were going to get, like, a crowd that was really going to be into it, that was really going to cheer along and those kinds of things. Whereas if you went like a week or two after the opening date, you had that tame audience. So, again, I like if a theater designated, like, hey, this is the fun time.
Yeah.
Like, this is the fun time slot. Or like the quote-alongs, like you said, Alamo Drafthouse does quote-alongs. Those are fun, too.
Let's do it.
Now, I didn't know if you saw this, Hayes. I know you're very plugged into downtown.
Don't know if I
Raleigh.
Saw this. What do you mean?
I know you saw
it. Of course. They like called me to get my okay on this before it went
I'm
through.
I'm trying to make good radio, Hayes Brewer. There's a social district that is coming to Raleigh downtown, which I like this.
So this came about last year, I believe it was, or maybe it was earlier this year. The North Carolina General Assembly passed a law, and to their credit, recently, the General Assembly has seen fit to relax some of the antiquated, they call them blue laws, basically like, you know, culture laws.
Yeah.
That, like, for example, some people treat Sunday as a sacred religious day.
Uh-huh.
But some people who don't ascribe that to religion just see Sunday as another day, and maybe the only day that they have off for work. And for a long time on Sundays, you couldn't buy a mimosa at brunch. You couldn't get a beer for an 11:30 soccer game, or, you know, before noon. And you couldn't buy beer, I think, even at stores. We've relaxed that a little bit. More recently, they've allowed towns, the North Carolina legislature had to pass a law to allow locally cities to decide whether they want to have a social district. I believe.
And for those who don't know, it's basically an open alcohol. It has to be like in a permitted cup.
There's some regulations.
Yes,
to it,
but in a designated area, you can go from like one shop to the next with an open alcohol container, similar to what you see in parts of New Orleans and some other cities.
Memphis has a good one.
Yeah, if you buy a beer, for example, at one bar, you can carry it to the next place.
And Raleigh actually, I don't know if they added this ordinance or if this is part of the law that was passed, but like you. You can't just bring alcohol into that area. Like, you've got to purchase. It's basically to benefit the vendors in that area. So you've got to buy the alcohol from there. I love this, and we already have a nickname for it. It's Drunk Town, because folks who remember about 7 years ago now, a guy who owned some stores downtown and didn't want to see more partying and reveling on Fayetteville Street took out political ads against candidates that were sort of pro-relaxing the social district, and he tried to label Raleigh as Drunk Town. And then a lot of people ran with it almost like a joke of like, yes, Raleigh has always been known for partying way too hard. They go so crazy out there in Raleigh.
Oh,
everybody knows it. You know, I picture Barney Fife be like, everybody knows up in Raleigh there. It's just go, go, go. So Drunk Town was sort of the ironic nickname, and we're sticking that now to the social district. It's Drunk Town.
All right, things are about to change here for what I have for Halftime Entertainment. This is legitimate breaking news.
I saw you waving your hands over there, and I was like, come on, man. We're not that far behind.
We're not. This is actually legit breaking news. This is from Ian Rappaport of the NFL.
Hold on. Ian Rappaport of the NFL. Okay, good. So it's not Duke. and UNC leaving the ACC?
Correct. All right, this is NFL news.
I'll let you go with the news.
Panthers are acquiring former number one overall pick Baker Mayfield from the Browns for a 2024 conditional fifth round pick. Sources tell him and Tom Pelissero. Deal is pending a physical. All parties split the financials to make it happen. According to Mike Garofalo, a little bit more on the financials. Browns will pay Baker Mayfield $10.5 million this season, which means they trimmed over $8 million in cash and salary cap space for them. Panthers will pay Mayfield approximately $5 million. Mayfield agreed to trim approximately $3.5 million off of his base salary. So again, Panthers are trading for Baker Mayfield, a 2024 conditional fifth-round pick. I don't know what those conditions are. This news just broke a couple minutes ago. But a conditional fifth-round pick in 2024, Panthers get Baker Mayfield. Browns are going to pay $10.5 million of Mayfield's salary. Panthers are going to pay about $5 million. He's going to agree to a pay cut, did Baker Mayfield. So that is legitimate breaking news. Panthers have a new quarterback.
All right. It'll be
you heard it here, and Adam Gold was not here for breaking news once again.
This totally counts. Trading for Baker Mayfield does not count as a big thing that happens. Now, this bears out, I think, what we were hearing along the lines of the Baker Mayfield scenario, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, everybody knows that Cleveland's got Deshaun Watson as their quarterback of the future, and the Baker Mayfield's days were numbered. That makes him not a hot trade commodity, right? Like, not a lot of value in the guy that you're going to get rid of, especially when he comes with not a crazy baggage salary, but like more salary than you want to pay a guy who might be a backup quarterback or might be a bottom half of the league starter quarterback, right? But the question was, it seemed less about what can they get for them, and it seemed more about how much can they get someone else to pay his salary. So I forget the numbers that you already said, but it sounded like a combo of Mayfield taking a pay cut so he could agree to get somewhere where he might be able to play.
Yep.
Panthers agreeing to take some of the salary. Cleveland agreeing to keep some of the salary. I'm sure we'll read more about how that affects cap rules and all that other stuff and what it means. The interesting question will be, is it a full-on three-way competition? The Panthers have kind of set up that Sam Darnold was their starter and that the rookie, I can't even think of his name now, the guy they got from Ole Miss, Matt Corral, was, since he was not seen as a possible first-round pick who might come in and challenge for a starting position. So they seemed comfortable going with Sam Darnold's going to be the starter. As we heard, he had some of the best practices we've ever seen at the
absolutely. He looked fantastic.
But it seemed like it was a pretty clear number one, number two. This makes it a little more uncertain, right?
Yeah.
Where you've got the guy that you've been claiming looks good and definitely knows the system versus a guy who has won games and led teams to the playoffs in the NFL, mm-hmm. even if as he was leading to the playoffs, it looked like he might also be holding them back a little bit.
I actually just reached out to Travis Hancock from WFNZ in Charlotte. He agreed to join us here in the next segment so we can push back, place our bets.
Perfect. We'll place our bets another time, and we will talk the latest Panthers news. If you hadn't heard it, trade has gone through. Baker Mayfield is now a Carolina Panther, pending a physical. Always got to throw the pending a physical in there. But, yeah, Panthers pick up Baker Mayfield for a fifth-round pick. It's nice to see. It doesn't feel like they gave up a lot for him. And then some salary agreements. We'll talk to Travis Hancock at WFNZ next on the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6th, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
I am a huge Panthers fan. I can't wait for Panthers games to start. I am not much of a talk about the Panthers in July kind of guy.
Remember, they play the Browns in week one.
In week one. I did
at
that
at home.
Like, you say remember that as if I knew that at some point already. I'm sure I'd probably seen that information, but at no point was that information stored in my head. This is true with all sports. This isn't when the games are here, I am into that. I'm into Wimbledon right now because we got like three matches left to the final, and there's people that I actually know playing. That's Taylor Fritz and Rafael Nadal in a set. I am a sports on the field kind of guy. I am not a talking sports in the off season kind of guy. Like, I was tuning into some sports radio, and they're like, we're doing two a days. We're talking two teams a day. And I'm like, totally cool. Not my thing. But when the Panthers trade for a new quarterback, I'm willing to dip my toe into the NFL world in mid-July. But even more importantly, I've got somebody smarter than I am to talk to about it. It is Travis Hancock, host of the Mac Attack 92.7 FM in Charlotte. Travis, WFNZ, what's going on? I said 92.7, but I always think of WFNZ as the AM. What's the old AM number?
Oh, that's still there. That's 610 AM, but we recently moved over to 92.7 FM.
That's right. So, it'll still always.
You can now hear us pass Shomar's on East Boulevard. So we're proud of our new signal we got.
No, that's good. But I was reading it straight from your Twitter bio, and I was like, wait a minute, that's not the number I'm used to. I'm used to some different digits there. But 92.7 on the FM, 610 on the traditional AM. Travis, what's going on? My question for you first is. And I'm stealing this straight from Jeremy Markovich. He's a great follow on Twitter. Yeah. Can we get Baker Mayfield to shoot the Progressive commercials from the would-be training facility in Rock Hill? Can we make that happen when Baker Mayfield becomes a Panther?
that's a tremendous idea. I wish I would have thought of it, too. I was going to say they could just shoot those about December normally with the way the fans have not attended the games here at the end of the year. But, no, that's a great idea. Look, let me set the scene for you right now in the city of Charlotte before we get into Baker, the quarterback. We had a high-speed chase here this afternoon throughout the city of Charlotte.
Okay.
All throughout South Charlotte. It lasted for 2 hours. The man stole 4 cars. A random citizen tried to bump this guy off the road. So a guy in a pickup truck started chasing the guy involved in the chase. And as soon as this guy crashed, the news broke that Baker Mayfield was a Carolina Panther.
All right, so a couple things here.
So we don't know if that was Sam Darnold trying to leave the city. We don't know. But this all happened at once, so I'm trying to tie all these loose ends together. High-speed chase, then Ian Rappaport tweets out, Baker's a Panther. Oh, my God, what did I wake up to from my nap today?
First of all, this is Charlotte has always been climbing the rungs of true big cityness, like getting an NFL team, big step. When you have big-time, high-speed chases and everybody's talking about it, I mean this totally seriously. This is not – like, that is a big city move right there. So, a huge tip of the cap.
It wasn't really high-speed. At one point, the man did a U-turn where it's like, hey, can you – at a high school parking lot. Hey, can you guys like stop this now? He's going like 30, but no, he just kept going. This man drove along so long that we finally got a quarterback again. And that's how long that man drove.
All right, who is the starting quarterback week one? Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield or Matt Corral? Let's throw his name in there.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's against the Cleveland Browns. That's going to up whoever the announce crew was for the drama. Look, we play a game here. We're played a game all off season called. The quarterback wheel of mediocrity,
right.
Where every day we'd spin it and try to figure out who's the next name on the list. And I landed on Baker Mayfield being here about 10 times, and now it's true. Look, is he great? No, certainly more accomplished in his career so far than Sam Darnold is. You only gave up a fifth-round pick for it, so it's not like you're not locked in for a huge investment. The roster's actually pretty good outside a quarterback. They fix the offensive line. The weapons can be really good if they're all healthy. The defense can be really good, especially in the secondary. So as crazy as it sounds, they haven't been far off from a playoff roster right now outside of quarterback.
I hear you, but you give me a lot of answers and not the one to my question. Who is the starting quarterback week one, Travis?
Matt Corral will be the guy. No, it's going to be
– I'd love it.
No doubt it's Baker Mayfield. He's the starting quarterback for this season. I will be surprised if it's not him unless there's an injury, unless it gets ugly and they want to see Matt Corral during the season, the third-round pick out of Ole Miss. But no, this is – they're not going to bring Baker Mayfield in here and all that surrounds him and not have him as – there's too much that – there's too much that goes into Baker Mayfield, I think, for him to come in and not have that job.
Sure, that makes sense. And what does that leave him with Sam Darnold? I mean, he seems like he's somewhere between a lower tier starting quarterback. I'm not willing to say he is terrible. He hasn't been great. And he might be a very good backup quarterback. But where does that leave the Panthers and Sam Darnold?
That's got to be because they still owe him, you know, $19 million.
Yeah, nobody's taking that.
No one took that on. So they tried, certainly. Yeah, Sam Darnold is the, you know, he gets ranked in these quarterback lists as like 33, 34, 35, which is the backup quarterback range. So that's unless he comes in under new offensive coordinator Ben McAdoo, who's a pretty good with quarterbacks, actually, and lights it up. I'd be hard-pressed to see Sam Darnold not being the backup. But even having said that, if they have to turn at some point to a backup quarterback, I mean, that it could be Matt Corral. So I have no idea, really, where Sam Darnold ranks. But the Baker-Darnold-Corral quarterback duel in Spartanburg is now going to be electrifying, well, probably not a lot of people but us, but it'll be there for sure.
Ultimately, I mean, we can play the quarterback hypotheticals the whole time with the way the Panthers have played the past couple years, but financially and speaking in terms of where they would be financially and where they would be with performance on the field, are they in any spot better now than they were when they first decided they were going to be without Cam Newton? Like, if they had stuck with an aging Cam Newton, or if they had stuck with Teddy Bridgewater the whole time, is there anything to suggest that they're in a better position now than they would have been in either of those? And sorry, I've run up against a hard break, so make this one short for me, buddy.
No, they're just going in circles. They're trying veteran quarterbacks, and they're trying to win now with Matt Rhule. And, you know, just if you want to get better, you have to find your franchise guy long-term.
Yeah.
Is Baker that guy? I mean, I guess he could be, but is he really? It doesn't seem like there's any answers more so than we had 2 years ago.
Travis Hancock, WFNZ, 92.7 on the FM, 6:10 a.m. We appreciate you coming on short notice to talk about the breaking Baker Mayfield news. Watch out on the streets out there, man. Don't let somebody random jump in your car and steal it, although it would be a cool story. Thanks for the time, man.
Thanks, I appreciate it, for sure.
Charlotte having car chases and quarterback trades. Interesting stuff going there.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.